This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, and we are following two developing stories today. First, WUNC has learned that UNC System President Tom Ross will step down next year. It is not exactly clear why he's leaving. Been strong suggestions he may have been pushed out by the Board of Governors. We're following that story. If there's any news, we will talk about that in this hour. Tom Ross has not officially announced he will step down. The UNC Board of Governors is in a series of meetings today. We will bring you the latest on that story later this hour if there's anything new to report. But first, Duke University said earlier this week that it would allow a weekly Islamic call to prayer from the bell tower of Duke Chapel. Christian preacher Franklin Graham quickly condemned the decision. He called on donors to stop their support for Duke. And yesterday, the university reversed the policy and said it would not broadcast the prayer, and it cited security concerns. Today, Muslim students say they will instead gather at the quad and they will pray. WUNC reporter Rima Krace is at Duke University now, and she joins us. Hello, Rima.
Hi.
What's going on there? You're at the quad at Duke University. What's the scene?
Yeah, I'm at the quad right now. I'm standing. I'm looking ahead. Right ahead of me, there's a huge group of media, and they're all surrounded around Imam Adil Zeb. He's the Muslim chaplain here at Duke University, and he's the director of Center of Muslim Life. So he's giving a little press conference right now. There's some students also gathered around him. And before him, Mike Schoenfeld, the vice president and public affairs and government relations of Duke University, spoke. And like you just mentioned, he cited security concerns for the reason of canceling and not allowing Muslim students to be at the top of the bell tower and chanting every Friday at 1 p.m. In Arabic, followed by translation in English. And he cited security concerns. He said that there were serious and credible concerns about personal safety. But also he said that, you know, this was started off as something that was trying to unify the campus, was becoming divisive. And then he also mentioned that, you know, Duke Chapel is a very powerful and visible symbol on the campus, and they needed to deliberate more on whether or not they should allow students to be on the bell tower. But I should note that before this press conference, I was out on sort of the periphery of the chapel, and I was talking with some students, and overwhelmingly all of them just didn't understand why Duke had canceled their original plans. A lot of them said that they were appalled, that they've had a lot of conversations with their friends and students and on social media in the classrooms, and said that they thought, you know, Duke stood for a place where they said that they thought they were at a place that really promoted religious diversity and tolerance, and this sort of was a slap in the face to the Muslim community. And so as I'm speaking right now, I'm seeing more students gathering around the imam. And after him, the Reverend Luke Powery, the dean of the Duke Chapel, will be speaking.
All right. And you described for us the reasons Duke reversed its decision, but take us back even further to the decision to allow the call to prayer to come from the Tower of Duke Chapel. How did that evolve?
You know, I honestly don't know too much of the specifics. I asked Mike earlier today, the Duke official who gave the press conference, and he said that it had been sort of a culmination of months of talking about allowing Muslim students to do this, and they wanted it to be a symbol of how you know, tolerant they are of Islam, and how you know, this is a chapel that several events occur in it. From Christians gather here, Jewish groups have gathered here. It's a place of multi worship. So you know, they wanted to celebrate that and have a place of, you know, they wanted to celebrate that.
We should point out, Christian preacher Franklin Graham got wind of this and began to launch a number of attacks against the decision itself. That gained a lot of momentum. He urged donors to stop giving money to Duke. And while Mike Schoenfeld cited the security concerns, you even asked him whether or not these threats to the economic well-being of Duke played a part. He didn't answer that. He talked about the threats that he got and how he received them. Here's the actual response. I'm going to play this in a minute. He didn't tell you who was responding or what reasons they gave, but here's the kind of thing that Duke got after Christian preacher Franklin Graham launched his attacks.
What we had a number of people who express their views to the university. We had a number of people who expressed their views to the university. Many of them were actually quite vitriolic and obscene. But we also had a dialogue with a number of people on campus and off who expressed concerns and raised questions, and they're important questions for the university to deal with.
All right. That's Mike Schoenfeld yesterday talking to Rima Kreis. Rima's on the line with me now. She's on the campus of Duke University where students are gathering to pray. Did you get any indication from Mike Schoenfeld what role these threats to donor support had in the decision?
He said he didn't acknowledge that it was because of the donor pressure. He said that they've had a lot of conversations with people on and off campus and that they didn't cave in the face of those threats. And he acknowledged that the chapel is this very symbolic and visible part of campus and that they should have deliberated more beforehand for what it would mean for Muslims to do the call to prayer from the bell tower. And when I asked him about what these serious, incredible threats were, he didn't give any specifics. And I checked with some law enforcement agencies, and I haven't heard back yet. But I also was in touch with some Muslim students from the Muslim Student Association, and they said that they had received some pretty nasty emails and hate mail, and for that reason, they weren't going to talk to media. I imagine that there has been a pretty negative response.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks very much, Rima.
Okay, thank you.
WNC's Rima Kreis reporting from Duke University. Well, a controversy that erupted at Duke raises questions about religious freedom on campus. We invited Franklin Graham or other representatives of Samaritan's Purse or the Billy Graham Library. We also invited representatives of Duke University from the administration. All declined. Joining me for this conversation then is Omid Safi. He is director of Islamic Studies Center at Duke University. Welcome back, Omid. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. It's great to be back.
Also joining us, Ian Tuttle, a fellow at the National Review Institute. He's written pieces critical of Duke's initial decision to allow the prayer to broadcast. Ian Tuttle, welcome to the State of Things.
Glad to be here.
So, Omid Safi, take us back. The initial decision, when you heard that Duke would broadcast the call to prayer, what was your reaction?
I was proud of us. I was proud of us because Duke is an international university. We have students, faculty member, and staff from all over the world in all 50 states. Our students are Jews, Christians, Hindus, Muslims, Buddhists, atheists, agnostics. And their religious life practice at Duke is now one that openly embraces everyone. The word that we keep using at Duke is home. We want Duke to be a home for people and to live at ease in the way that they would at their own home. So I was really proud of the symbolic gesture, though, as a matter of fact, I think it's also important for people to know that Muslims have been praying inside the chapel. They've been praying inside the chapel for 20 years, and those practices are going to go on. They're going to be praying inside the chapel today. So at some level, this is really a symbolic argument about inclusiveness from the Franklin Grahams of the world, which overlooks the very real practice of diversity and pluralism that we already have here.
Ian Tuttle, what was your reaction to that initial decision to allow the prayer to be broadcast, call to prayer?
I think you have two things here, and Omid's remark is interesting because I think it is largely symbolic and not necessarily for the right reasons, though. The first thing that ought to be pointed out is that you have a problem of religious. You sort of have the natural problem of religious pluralism, and how far does this extend, and sort of what are the limiting principles that surround this question. So, from the standpoint of Duke, where you already have, as Omid said, a thriving community of religious diversity, was there a particular need to go above and beyond to allow this particular practice? But what you see, at least from the university, and what you saw from the Associate Dean of Religious Life, Christy Lorsap, who penned an op-ed in a local newspaper explaining the decision, was that this was an effort by the university and by the chapel to, she says as much, to rehabilitate a group that they think has been unfairly maligned. And that's not just a policy of religious pluralism, but that's going above and beyond to make an explicit sort of value judgment of a particular religious body and then separate them out, try to elevate them. And I'm not sure that that's the place of a university.
Ian, you said something about the natural problem of religion. Religion is not a natural phenomenon. It's a human artifact. So I'm wondering what you meant by the natural problem of religions coming together. What is natural?
Well, I think it's the natural problem of a principle of religious pluralism. So at a place, at a number of universities, at all sorts of institutions, and also in a society at large, when you have these different identity groups that are rubbing, when you create a principle in which you invite different identity groups to share the same space, it's inevitable that they're going to rub up against one another. And if your principle is one of allowance, is one of toleration with no other sort of principles guiding you, then you have no way to make judgments about what kind of environment you're going to create.
All right. Well, I'm going to take a break right here. We will come back and continue this conversation examining religious liberty on college campuses on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, talking about Duke University's decision to reverse a new policy that would have allowed for the Muslim call to prayer to be broadcast from Duke Chapel. We invited Franklin Graham and other representatives of Samaritan's Purse and the Billy Graham Library. We also invited representatives of Duke University's administration to the program. They declined. Here with us today is Omid Safi. He is director of the Islamic Studies Center at Duke University. Ian Tuttle is with us as well, a fellow at the National Review Institute. And joining us now is Miriam Cook. She's a professor of Asian and Middle Eastern Studies at Duke University and director of the Duke Middle Eastern Studies Center. Miriam Cook, welcome back to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
What was your reaction then to the decision? We'll take us now to the reversal when you heard that Duke had reversed its decision. What did you think?
I guess I had mixed feelings about this because I was a little concerned, and in fact, Omid and I spoke yesterday about this. I was a little concerned about the timing because with what was going on in Paris last week and obviously the vilification of Muslims in Europe with the situation in Belgium also, I wasn't sure that the timing was absolutely right. I am totally 150% behind the initiative. I think, however, that something that is as momentous as a decision to have the adhan, or the Muslim call to prayer, be sounded from the tower of the chapel needed to be very carefully timed, and why not do it next week? And I feel with something like this, it is the first time, as far as I know, and I've checked with a number of people, that this would happen, that a university would allow Muslims to call to prayer from the equivalent of a church steeple. So I absolutely believe that this should happen eventually. I hope that President Broadhead will come out with a statement. I think I've spoken with a number of people, and we are waiting for him to make a statement on behalf of the university so that it isn't just rumors, strange ways that we have heard about what happened yesterday. So that absolutely needs to happen. The other thing I do want to mention, and that is that a few years ago, the shofar, which is a Jewish trumpet that is used to bring in the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, was actually blown from the top of the chapel. So there is a precedent for a non-Christian spectacle, if we can talk about sound being a spectacle. There is a precedent for a non-Christian spectacle to happen from the tower.
All right, Omid Safi, I want to ask you a couple of questions to respond to something that Ian Tuttle said just before the break First of all, the fact that you need to be rules when different groups are brought together. You need to be able to set rules and boundaries so that conflict doesn't emerge. And also, I know you have written about this too. That in a sense, this is more than just plurality. That this is a simply disguised for religious preference or redressing wrongs, and that this is an inappropriate way to do that. So, if that gets you to respond to that,
yeah, it's interesting because the truth of the matter is that Duke, like America, like the human community, it's a diverse place. We got different people of different religions, races, sexual orientations. So the conversation is not about an ideology. It's about a fact. It's a fact of diversity that our human communities are diverse. So how are we going to manage this diversity in a public space? And there's three options. The first option is an adamantly secular option, no religious symbols in the public space. The second option is one religious tradition, mine, and nobody else's. And then the third option is that actually multiple voices, multiple religious traditions, symbols, and practices are going to participate in a public arena, and we're going to have a symphony. And sometimes it's going to be harmonious, and sometimes it may not sound so harmonious, but everybody gets to have a say. And when I think about the chapel and the fact that Muslims, Jews, Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, secular humanists are already participating in the life of the chapel, that the church bells are tolling, and every day and twice on a Sunday, there is no exclusion of Christianity, no matter what Franklin Graham might think, and that the Jewish tradition has already been acknowledged, and we even have had the chapel bells playing tunes from Hanukkah back in 2011. If we've gone from one to two, why not continue to embrace people, the 700 people who are on the Duke campus who practice Islam? And the last thing I would say is, as a scholar of Islam, I always go around telling people we don't want Al-Qaeda and ISIS to have the monopoly on Islam. Islam is a spectrum, some of it really beautiful, some of it quite ugly. And I also don't want the Franklin Grahams of the world to get to define Christianity exclusively. And I want to make sure that as we're having this conversation, we don't lose sight of the open-hearted, generous, pluralistic Christians and Jews and Hindus and Buddhists and atheists on the Duke campus who participated in the initial conversation. They, too, are part of this symphony of the public space.
Ian Tuttle, I'll get you to respond to any of that you want, but I'd like you to start with the notion that if you are really going to have a kind of pluralistic community with regard to religion, the options are to eliminate all symbols, to include only one, or to include them all. How would you respond to that part of what Omid just said?
That seems to me largely correct, although each of those is liable to a certain caricature. I think Omid is quite right on the point that this is a fact of life. It's something that you have to address in a concrete situation. It's not abstract, and that in most circumstances, the ideal response is going to be allowing as much space as possible for all to participate. The problem that I was pointing out before the break, and which is the problem that is indicated by what's happened at Duke, and that extends to a variety of situations in any society, is that there is a tension when you allow those open spaces to exist, when you allow all those voices to interact. There's a tension between that and between that and cultivating some sort of identity. So I want to say that I am not necessarily against having the Muslim call to prayer be issued at Duke. The question is, for what reasons is it going to be allowed? And what you saw, at least from the statements of the chapel staff, is that it was not just to create an equal sort of playing field, so to speak, among the different religions that exist on campus, but was actually to elevate or rehabilitate one of those over the other. So in this particular instance, the principle of religious pluralism, sort of an equal playing field for all, was used as a veil for actual religious preference. And in that case, you elevated one religion and seemed to disenfranchise, to a certain extent, others, at least implicitly.
All right, Miriam Cook, how would you respond? I know you spoke to the timing. What would you say about the rationale? What should the rationale be?
Well, let me just quickly respond to something that Ian has just said, and that is that there has not been any tension among the religions at Duke. As Omid mentioned earlier, all religions have the chaplain as their place, the chapel as their place of worship. Our former imam, who now is sort of ambassador for Duke for Islamic affairs, has been working very, very closely with the Center for Jewish Life. He's now in Israel as we speak, working with Jewish representatives there on faith issues. So that has not been the case ever at Duke, and I've been at Duke for 34 years. And let me just mention that, again, to reiterate what I said earlier, and that is that the shofar was blown from the tower to, if we're talking about elevating one religion above others, we had the possibility of Islam being for one moment in Duke's 80, 90 years of existence being made not elevated above Christianity, but for a moment given a space of equality. And this would happen 3 minutes every Friday. And I hope that this will eventually happen when everybody is brought on board. But to talk about this as elevating Islam above Christianity is ridiculous.
Well, let me ask you about that, Ian, because you made that statement in good faith, but I'd like to hear you amplify it and tell us why you think that, in fact, it would elevate or in any way privilege Islam over Christianity, whose bells are heard frequently from that very tower.
Right. And so this is, I want to reiterate that I'm not against necessarily this going on. I think that you can certainly make the case from multiple precedents in Duke's history that this would be just fine. But what you again, I want to go back to Christy Lohr Sapp's op-ed in the News and Observer.
And cheap. Just to point this out, Christy Lohr at Duke Chapel, at one of the students who initiated this and got the idea going. Go ahead.
The associate dean of religious life for the chapel publishes and says, we've seen all of these characterizations, all of these negative stereotypes of Islam in the news recently. And what we here at Duke want to do is show a strikingly different face. We want to show essentially that these stereotypes are not true. That's a political decision that, at least by her reckoning, the university is making. They're making a value judgment about what Islam is and is not, and then promoting one sort of view. The problem with that is, A, where does it stop? And B, is the university going to extend the same sort of activity to other groups? There are plenty of people around the world who think that, who maintain Jewish stereotypes that existed in pre-World War II Germany. Is the university going to reach out and say there are these negative stereotypes about Jews, and we want to make sure that the peaceful and prayerful side of Judaism is represented because we think the other is wrong? You can continue down the list of these hypotheticals, and that's the problem I'm pointing out with this principle.
Well, Omid Safi, did the university go about it the wrong way?
You know, I think we as universities respond to our own communities, and what we are entitled to do is to acknowledge the diversity, the vibrancy of our own communities. So what I'm going to talk about is just very openly the set of comments that have been made by Franklin Graham and others about Christianity being excluded and marginalized. So there's something in me that finds it humorous, if I were in a humorous mood today, to hear the language of marginalization from people that have never shown any solidarity for African Americans, Hispanics, gay and lesbians, poor working people, and now all of a sudden they're using the language of marginalization. But if we're talking about Christianity being marginalized, come walk with us around the Duke campus. The entire west campus of Duke University is laid out in a cross pattern. The Christian cross is on the emblem of Duke University. Erudition and religion is the motto of Duke University. The chapel is the symbol of Duke University. So by what logic can we talk about Christianity being excluded when we have multiple Christian services on every Sunday and the church bells are ringing every day and twice on Sunday, and we're talking about a two-minute call to prayer once a week? So I think these are the times that we have to really use our intelligence, our compassion, our sanity, our common sense, and avoid the kind of slippery slope arguments that are being presented here.
Well, you know, other universities across the country have been tackling similar issues. And joining us now is Kimberly Winston. She's a national correspondent for Religion News Service. Hello, Kimberly.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Is there an indication that other universities have grappled with this particular issue or similar issues?
Oh, my goodness, this is such a perfect storm, which kind of makes it really, really interesting. I've been reporting this particular story for the last, like, let's say 10 hours, and I haven't been able to find a single similar instance of this happening on a college campus. The closest I can find to an outside group getting alarmed about something Muslim happening on a campus was last year at the University of Florida. They were going to open their Islamic Studies Center on campus, and a group calling itself the Coalition of Concerned Citizens protested. And, of course, they opened their center. The only other thing that I found is when there's pushback against Muslims on campus, it tends to be about halal food in the cafeteria or requests to close the campus swimming pool for a few hours so that women can swim alone. This is very unique. Duke would have been, to the best of my knowledge, the best of my reporting, the first college campus to allow the amplification broadcast of the call of prayer from a tower.
You know, the other thing that you've been covering as well, this question of exclusion, whether or not allowing one religion to express itself or be present on campus in any way excludes. You've been covering this, although it's the Christian groups, particularly in California, that have run afoul of tolerance. Tell us about that.
Yes, this is we're kind of seeing a trend that this is becoming a tactic of conservative Christians, is to claim that it is they who are being discriminated against when things like this happen. So Franklin Graham's comments on his Facebook page are kind of following that particular trend. Yeah, we had an instance out here in California. It's actually a national instance, but we're the most recent of a conservative evangelical Christian campus-based group, InterVarsity, and Campus Crusade for Christ. Their bylaws state that their officers must be professing Christians, and at public universities, that public universities like California State University claim that that runs afoul of their all-comers, their equal opportunity policies, that, you know, you can't have a club that excludes people on the basis of religion, even if it's a religious club. And the law firms and groups that argue for those, for Campus Crusade for Christ and InterVarsity, make the argument that they are being discriminated against by the university for requiring that their members be Christian. So we're seeing a lot of this now.
All right. Well, I wish we had more time now, but I want to thank all of my guests. Kimberly Winston is a national correspondent for the Religion News Service. Thank you, Kimberly.
Thank you.
We've also been talking with Miriam Cook, a professor of Asian and Middle Eastern Studies at Duke University and director of Duke's Middle Eastern Studies Center. Omid Safi is director of Islamic Studies at Duke, and Ian Tuttle is a fellow at the National Review Institute. I want to thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frank, for having us.
The other story we're following this hour is story of the president of the university system at the University of North Carolina, Tom Ross, and we just received an announcement that the University of North Carolina Board of Governors has decided to begin the process of leadership transition. I'm reading this from the news, the press release, folks. The board believes President Ross has served with distinction and that his performance has been exemplary and that he's a devoted full energy and intellect and passion. In any event, they're asking him to step down. He will serve until January of 2016 or until they find a replacement, and we will continue to follow that story as well on the state of things. Meanwhile, coming up, we're going to listen to live music. Cellist Cicely Parnas will be with us live on the state of things. Please stay tuned.